remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning again. Today, something's happening that I think we should acknowledge, and it's going to be a focus for my talk. Right now, as we speak, in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, many Buddhists, ordained and not ordained, are acting to bring awareness to the situation of undocumented immigrants who are being held there. Many, many folded cranes are being brought to the site to express a desire for peace and dignity for all beings. We folded a bunch here, and we're going to continue to do so, to participate in this. So if you're interested in folding cranes, let one of us know, and you can join the party. This action is being led by a group called Tsuru for Solidarity. Tsuru are the cranes. And it's an action that was started by Japanese Americans to recognize the fact that some of the sites, including Fort Sill, that are being used to imprison undocumented immigrants, were also used to incarcerate Japanese Americans during World War II. So Fort Sill, in particular, has a long, complex history. Native Americans were imprisoned there. Then Japanese Americans were incarcerated there. And as many of you probably know, leaders in the Japanese American Buddhist community were the first ones, particularly priests, were the first ones that were arrested and held in this terrible time when many people lost homes, livelihoods, land, for no other reason than the fact that they were Japanese or Japanese-American. So Buddhist teachings teach us that our lives, our health, our ability to find peace individually and as communities are all dependent upon recognizing our interdependence. People talk about enlightenment, but individual enlightenment or liberation, spiritual or otherwise, is a contradiction in terms. So the more we focus on our own individual well-being without recognizing that we are a part of everything else, the more we suffer. So today I wanted to recognize what's happening at Fort Sill. But I don't really want to talk about that specific action. What I want to talk about is how we live together and how we listen to one another. There are people in this room, I am sure, who think that this is just the best thing since sliced bread, that we should do this. There are others who may think, no, this is a wrong-headed action. We can differ greatly in how we engage with life, the choices that we make, what we think are the best actions. The question that we want to guide us is, what guides our response to the world? What do we return to in our response to the world? So we can make different choices based on that, but what returns us to the guiding principles that we share? in Buddhism, particularly in Soto Zen, we want to deepen wisdom and compassion. We want to deepen our ability to see clearly our interdependence, to know our shared existence, who we are in the deepest sense. Am I talking too softly? Can you hear me in the back? Yeah, okay. I got hearing aids not too long ago. One of them's not working today. And sometimes people have said my voice gets softer now, which it already kind of started out that way, so I can speak up. That's what I'm talking about today, speaking up. Okay.
Love it.
Huh?
I love it. I love the humor.
So, we want to focus on seeing clearly. In this case, it means seeing clearly how we're interdependent, seeing clearly how the choices that we make impact one another, the ways that we live impact one another. And based in that, when we are awake to that interdependence, our heart opens, we are guided by this. We want to be of service to the world. How we do that may be individual. And we can disagree about how we do that. But if we disagree and we come back to the basic principles, we find what we share. Does this make sense to you? Mm-hmm. This is super important. Because if we want to cultivate wisdom and compassion, we have to be able to cultivate wisdom and compassion in the presence of difference. If we can't do that, we're sunk. Because our world gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until all we're doing is hanging out with everybody that just agrees with us and defending against anything else. So this can be, you know, what colors you wear. I mean, it can be anything. We have to be willing to call on this principle of interdependence and compassion, respect, mutuality, in the presence of difference. So this is what we do if we want to be good participants in the world, and it's what we do if we want to live a life of peace and aliveness, openness, and learning. So there's a story I want to tell you that's related to this. The story is called The Sound of the Bell. It comes from a long time ago in another galaxy called Japan, medieval Japan. Okay. So there was a Zen master in the later days of the shogunate in the Meiji period who was very strict in his monastery. And in this temple, as in most Zen temples, the monks in training got up in the morning at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And as soon as they awaken, the monks go to the meditation hall, the zendo, and practice zazen, practice sitting meditation for an hour or so. And then there's service and breakfast and more zazen and work. And that's the day. But the day starts very early. So even if many people are present in the dark pre-dawn hall, it is as quiet as if there were no one there, except you can hear the breathing. Right? Very quiet, very still. You might hear a rustling of someone changing the incense or something, but it's very, very quiet. And this story says, this leads into a pool of deeper quietness, which stills the whole body. This is the atmosphere we aim for in the Zendo. Is to quiet our bodies and mind, to sit together in the stillness. When we sit together in the morning and the sun is rising and the birds are starting, it's such a lovely, lovely time. During this period of zazen, the temple bell in the tower sounds 108 times. Now, there's lots of discussions about why 108, and nobody really knows, to tell you the truth. Now loudly, now softly, rapidly, then slowly. Some people as the story says, are good at ringing the bells and some are not. Can you relate to that? Also, depending upon the weather conditions of the day, the bell sounds clearly and sometimes not so clearly. So you can imagine outside, the wind is changing, and it's when it's wet or rainy, the sound might not travel as far. And you're out there in the dark, hitting, and these bells are big, right? This giant bell. So, the teacher says one morning, "That's strange. This is the bell I'm used to hearing, but this morning I feel a kind of vigor in the sound, which goes right through my body." After Zazen, the teacher returned to his quarters and instructed the attendant, "Go call the one who struck the bell this morning." A newly arrived novice monk was ushered in. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. The abbot says, "You're the one that hit the bell this morning, aren't you?" said the abbot. "Yes, sir," the novice monk replies. "Well, you see, this morning was the first time I, stammered the novice, timidly bowing his head and probably thinking he was going to be scolded for ringing the bell badly. How many of you here have rung the bell during service? Here. Yeah. How many of you were nervous the first time you did it? I'm raising my hand too, you notice. Now, the thing about ringing the bell is no one is going to die if you ring the bell. I mean, if you wailed on this thing, you might shock people a little bit because there you are sitting quietly and bam, you know. Or when we do the New Year's Eve celebration, everybody has a chance to ring the bell because we ring the bell 108 times. And everyone is welcome to come to the New Year's Eve celebration. You don't have to be experienced or anything. So there is a lot of unevenness to the way the bell is hit. But each person brings their whole body, heart, and mind to this. And the thing is, you don't want to be, if you're too timid hitting the bell, it goes, you know. It's all very irritating. You know? Hit the bell, right? You want to hit the bell or strike the bell or call forth the bell. So the newly arrived novice monk was ushered in. "You're the one who hit the bell this morning, aren't you?" Willie's. "Yes, sir. Well, you see, this morning was the first time," stammered the novice, timidly bowing his head and probably thinking he was going to be scolded for ringing the bell badly. And the abbot says, "No, I didn't summon you because you rang the bell badly. I want to ask you, what were your feelings when you struck the bell? What were you experiencing when you struck the bell?" The novice answered, "I was taught that to strike the bell is to hear the voice of Buddha. It is to bring forth the Buddha. Therefore, when we hit the bell, we must hit it with this attitude. This morning, my turn to strike the bell came for the first time. So concentrating on hearing the Buddha's voice and bringing forth the Buddha from the bell, I put the strength of my whole body into my hands when I grasp the mallet and I hit the bell. After each strike of the bell, I put my hands together and made a prostration." "So that's it," the abbot said. "Well, don't forget that feeling in your practice." This novice who adored the abbot's noble character and who never left his side for 18 years, was the man who became the 64th abbot of Eheiji Temple, which is the primary temple of our sect. So this attitude of striking the bell, this sense of, I want to call forth the voice of Buddha. I am coming here. I am taking responsibility. I am scared. I am here. I am trying to call forth the voice of the Buddha. This is what we want to cultivate, right? What is the voice of the Buddha? This monk was fully engaged in serving his community. He was not saying, oh, not me, I can't do that, I'm not good enough. He wasn't full of bravado. He was serving the community and he was listening for the voice of reality. He was present, he was caring, and he was doing his best. He wasn't trying to do it right, like a performance. And when he met with the abbot, he didn't know if he'd done it right or not. He simply did his best. There's a feeling to this, don't you think? A feeling of connection, humility, a lack of self-centeredness. There's a dedication and aliveness. It brings forth the voice of the bell, too. Fully, so we can enjoy it. When we don't forget this feeling, the abbot, the teacher is saying, don't forget that feeling. This is not just about hitting the bell. This is about everything you do in your life. Everything you do. Are you calling forth the voice of the Buddha? Are you calling forth this compassion, this interdependence? How are you dedicating yourself with your full energy to call this forth in relation and in service to everyone else? We can't put the voice of the Buddha easily into words, can we? Isn't it a feeling? It's a like poetry. It speaks to us. Or maybe not. Use some other words if you want. That's fine too. But this is the way we want to relate. This is what guides us. This is the spirit of wisdom and compassion. We don't know it like we can describe it in words, but it's this relational quality. If we can do this even in the face of difference, even in the face of great pain or stress or hardship, then we have a chance to be alive in our lives in a certain way. The Heart Sutra, this is the Heart Sutra up here. This is a central text of our school. And the first line of it is Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. This is the Bodhisattva of boundless compassion. When practicing deeply Prajnaparamita, which is wisdom, clearly saw that the self, the five aggregates, the self, was empty of separation, empty of inherent existence. In other words, completely connected. Completely connected. And thus was safe from suffering. Notice that the protagonist, so to speak, the central figure in this teaching on wisdom, is the Bodhisattva of boundless compassion. Avalokiteshvara, Canon, Kuan Yin. This is the Bodhisattva that's said to hear the cries of the world. Why would the Bodhisattva of compassion be in the center of this teaching on wisdom? Because when we see clearly, when we know this interdependence, great compassion, boundless compassion, enfolds us and arises within us. It's not separate. And when we are guided by great compassion, the clouds of delusion part, and we can see how we want to act. We chant this text every day, and it reminds us that wisdom and compassion are inseparable. That when we listen deeply to this person, this being, this situation in front of us, we are guided by compassion and wisdom in how we act. We don't know what the perfect response is, right? We're humans. We can only see what we can see. This is not about perfection. But if we return again and again to this orientation, if we remember the spirit of the monk hitting the bell, if we remember to call on canon, then even in the midst of complexity, difference, difficulty, we have a shot at behaving and acting and contributing in a way that is wholesome. And the good news is, we're happier that way. Right? When we participate in the world in this way, we find greater joy in our lives. And we don't do this alone. So one of the things that's been interesting is Sandy Musashi has been teaching us to fold cranes. And it's a complicated process. How many of you have folded the cranes? Yeah. It's complicated. Unless you're Raoul, who gets it in one shot. So in order to make it workable, Sandy divided us into two groups. One group did the first part, and one group did the second part. Right? And the first group was responsible for the first half of the folding and didn't get to have the pleasure of seeing the little crane come out at the end. But if I can tell you as a member of the second group, if the first group didn't do their job correctly, you end up with a very strange-looking crane. So the first group is dedicated to that process. The second group is dependent upon the first group to get the folds right so that it can end up with the crane. And the second group gets the pleasure of seeing the little crane. So slowly we learn together. Slowly, the first group gets the first part down, passes it off to the second group. The second group gets the second part down. And we have to do this together. Slowly, we'll all learn it. We'll all be able to fold the cranes, each one from the beginning to the end. But I hope we don't lose this relationship. I hope we don't lose the fact that we each are dependent on one another to create this gift that we're going to send off, to represent our vow, our intention, that everyone be treated with respect and dignity. This is our Zen practice. We sit Zazen and we act in the world. We return to our intention over and over again. We cultivate compassion, clear seeing, returning over and over and over and over. We investigate how we can work together to call forth the voice of the Buddha. And we ask ourselves, how do I return? For the monk, it was, I was taught, in this very simple way, I was taught that when we hit the bell, we listen for the voice of the Buddha. What is it for you? What's the phrase? What's the posture? What's the attitude that returns you to this effort? So that you can speak up. You can contribute. And it might be different. What you have to say, what comes out of that intention might be different than the person sitting next to you. But if we do this together, we can hear one another. Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, boundless compassion, known as Kanzeon, canon. There's a chant called the Enmeijuku Kanon Gyo, which I return to when I was thinking about this lecture and I was looking at going into all the details about that chant, but not this morning. I think we might have an evening sometime where we chant together, and I'll describe the chant. But two of the lines translate roughly to morning mind Kanzeon, evening mind Kanzeon. In other words, first thing in the morning, Kanzeon, boundless compassion. First thought, to orient our day. You know, what do you do first thing in the morning? Do you think about your aches and pains or all the jobs that you have to do that day? Or what do you think of first thing in the morning? Think about what it's like if we start with Kanzaiyan. Kanzaiyan, you know. One of my teachers said first thing, she trained herself, first thing in the morning, hands together, Gasha. You know, gratitude for waking up in the morning, gratitude for being able to get out of bed, breathe, whatever. Morning mind, Kanzaiyan, boundless compassion. Evening mind, Kanzaiyan, boundless compassion. So at the end of the day, to frame your life, your day, within the context of boundless compassion, to see your day from the perspective of Kanzaiyan, to see your life from the perspective of boundless compassion. So, bookends. Morning mind, Kanzaiyan. Evening mind, Kanzaiyan. All day long, remembering to return to wanting to cultivate the voice of the Buddha and carry on the Buddha way in that way. Very simple. Very simple. Not easy. It's like Suzuki Roshi said, our practice is very simple, but it's not easy. You know, you're listening to someone and you want to wring their neck or shout at them to say, Kanzaiyan, let me listen. Let me be present. Let me not get into toxic judgment. It does not mean you don't assess things. Very, very, very clear difference between those. This way we're practicing with this monk and being guided to build a foundation. So that when it's our turn to strike the bell, we have the foundation to say, oh, right, I was taught. I was taught. I have something to return to. And I can hit the bell, strike the bell, call forth the bell in service to the whole community. Okay? Thank you.